Piper.
And I'm Erin.
Welcome to Off the Tracks podcast, where we explore what it means to do law differently.
Today, we are joined by JP Rodriguez. JP is the paralegal program coordinator at a number of the Trios College campuses, a legal instructor, and a criminal defense lawyer. JP has won multiple awards for excellence in teaching and also spent a number of years teaching law in China. Piper and I came to know JP through his Justice in Pieces speaker series. Streamed live on YouTube, JP hosts guests from the legal profession to discuss the evolution of their careers and offer advice to JP's students. Justice in Pieces was recognized with the Canadian Law Blog Award in 2021 in the same category as Off the Tracks for Best Podcast. So we are so excited to have him on the show. Piper and I have both been in JP's hot seat as guests on the Justice in Pieces, and we are so excited to have him on the podcast to learn more about his career and switch the tables a bit.
Perfect. I'm excited. It's different being on the other side of the chair. You had the experience with me on Justice in Pieces. So I'm looking forward to being able to answer the questions and not ask them.
So JP, we're super excited you're here because at this point you've interviewed, what is it? How many hundreds of people have you interviewed on Justice in Pieces?
I think it was over 400. I was just trying to do the math. I stopped counting. Actually, this weekend, I'm going to get the exact number because I'm sending some stuff to Osgood students that are helping out in terms of organizing everything. So I'll find out the exact number, but I believe it's over 400 because about a year ago, it was over 300. So 425, I'm going to say. Let's see, when I get the numbers back, I'll give you the right exact number for you, Piper.
That's incredible. So JP, over 400 people that you've interviewed on your show, and you've learned all about the different ways that their careers have evolved over time and they first became interested in the legal profession. And so we were hoping that you could tell our listeners a little bit about how your career has evolved over time.
Well, certainly it fits in the mold here. It's not on the tracks by any means. Definitely a unique journey. I mean, I don't think I would have anticipated going back, you know, from law school that I'd be here doing all sorts of different things 10, 15 years later. So, I mean, it really started from, you know, a setback, right? I mean, I think a lot of people have to learn to make lemonade out of lemons. And really, when I was in law school, I thought, I didn't really know much about what the paths were, but everyone was doing OCIs and everyone was going into big law, or I thought at least everyone was, and let me do that too. And didn't work out. And then looking for articling, initially, I wasn't having very much success. So there was something in Osgood. They had this Teach in China program. And I thought, let me apply to this and see how that is. I never really had an inkling. I had some excellent, excellent teachers over the years from elementary school all the way up. And I thought, maybe that's something that I can get my hand in. I enjoyed traveling when I was in Osgood. They had a couple exchange programs. So I thought, let's give this a shot, see how it goes. And now I got there and I love teaching and it was a great experience. I mean, I didn't really know what it would be like, but got to do so many cool things. And I really loved the teaching aspect. And every time I kept coming back home thinking, okay, it's time to go get articling done and move on. I ended up going back for another year. And eventually after 3 years there, I said, that's it. I want to become a lawyer. And so I got the articling done. I got called. I continued practicing a bit, but I missed teaching. I missed that opportunity to connect with students, to share with them, to help them grow and develop. And so eventually I found myself back with a teaching job at Trios College here. And I've been doing it for over 6 years and a number of other places. I've taught at a number of different colleges. And I've just loved the experience. And I've done that with mixing in a little bit of my own clients, but mostly working as telephone duty counsel. It's typically an overnight type of job. I mean, I have a few times in the daytime, but mostly like a 12 a.m. to 8 a.m. type of shift to provide legal advice to those who are arrested or need summary immigration advice for them that are detained at the border. And so that worked well with teaching, a couple classes in the afternoon or evening and kind of being like a vampire almost, right? That I would be sleeping from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. or something and then go and teach in the afternoon evenings. So it worked out really well. And then eventually I just became getting more and more classes. at more and more schools, and eventually at Trios, they became the paralegal program coordinator for a number of the different campuses. And I've loved it, and I've loved the mix of different things. And certainly, as you alluded to, I started a podcast at the start of the pandemic, thinking this was going to be a couple of weeks there, something cool for my students. And here we are, 400 plus guests later. And I've loved it. And I've loved meeting and talking to so many different people in the legal field. And knowing that there's so many different journeys, right? That thinking, well, hey, there's one path going through, you know, summering, articling, getting called back, becoming a partner. That used to be what I think a lot of people thought was what most people did when they got into law. And the reality is, I mean, I've spoken to some people that have done that. Actually, yesterday I had a guest that was exactly the journey they had, but tons and tons of other people who have done really unique experiences. And I think that's really good for students to learn that you can forge your own journey.
Yeah, thank you so much for telling us a bit more about how your career has sort of taken many twists and turns. And I come from a family of lots of teachers. So my sister's a teacher, my mom is a teacher, my dad's a teacher, my uncle's a teacher. So I love the idea that you've been able to weave your two passions and sort of make your own sort of path fusing those two areas together. Are you still currently taking on like private clients yourself and doing the duty counsel work as well? Or have things completely shifted to doing mostly teaching and coordinator work?
I still have a couple of clients that are active that I haven't really been taking anything new really since the pandemic. I found it's too difficult to try to navigate everything, and you want to make sure you're doing your duty to your client there, right? That you don't have to be running into or canceling a class or something like that. So I found I still have a few that I have to finish up things with, but largely it's been teaching predominantly throughout the day and the occasional time, maybe on like a Saturday night or a Sunday night that I'd work as duty counsel, just because, again, I like to still do that. But more and more I found between coordinating and justice in pieces, of course, too, and the teaching, that keeps me really busy. And I think that that's the path that I've been doing, at least in the last couple of years.
Well, we both have lots of questions for you, but I was going to ask if you could explain a bit more about the duty counsel role. I've been working, doing a lot of detention reviews in the immigration context recently, and I know you mentioned that you have been doing duty counsel over the phone. That's primarily in the criminal realm, is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, primarily, I would say like 95% or so, just ballparking it, is going to be people who are arrested at, you know, the local police detachment, and they get their call to a lawyer, and it's providing them with advice about, you know, remaining silent and not to, you know, unlock their cell phones and give passwords and things like that out. And in some cases, if they're being held overnight for bail, maybe reaching out to potential sureties and saying, providing that information. In the immigration context, it comes up if someone is detained at the border or if there was like an immigration warrant executed, and just giving them, again, the basic explanation of things, you know, their Vienna Convention rights, if they don't know about things like that. And the same thing, if there's any potential sureties, to reach out to them and let them know. If people have their own counsel who are typically asleep at 3:30 in the morning, then I would sometimes leave a message or send an email that, hey, your client is in custody and they're here, and hopefully then they can connect and pick up in the morning. Or duty counsel in the courts usually are there to assist at that point. Or I'm not sure actually in terms of the immigration, if they're held, what the next step is going to be in the immediate future there for them. But usually I think there's others that will step in at that point. But it's just that a lot of it is also just reassuring people about what's happening next, to know, I mean, you're the only contact that they may have at probably the worst moment in their lives, right? So it's just also reassuring them of, you know, here's the legal steps and what's going to happen next. And you'll have an opportunity to have further counsel in the morning, and hopefully you'd be released, or in some cases they are being released right afterwards after the police are done questioning.
Yeah, wow, that's very neat. And I didn't even know that that service existed for immigration as well. So I guess I'm the lawyer that they get after they speak to you or someone like you. I'm the one that kind of helps with the bail hearing and if they haven't been released at that point. So that's really neat to kind of learn a bit more about, you know, who's there assisting at odd times of the night and when they are picked up with their first interaction with the either criminal or immigration authorities.
Also, Erin, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say that JP is the first criminal lawyer we're having on the pod. I can't think that we've had another criminal lawyer. And if we have, I feel like I'm making an acceptance speech right now. Like, I'm so sorry if I've missed anyone in my speech. Like, I'm so sorry if I've missed anyone who was a criminal lawyer that was on the podcast. But this is going to be our 27th episode. And JP, you're the very first one, I'm pretty sure. I'm really hoping now in this moment that I'm right. But we're so like, just, I have so many questions for you, JP. And I think it's so cool how you weave together all of these different like passions and talents and how you seemingly have like as many hours in the day as Beyonce, as like the saying goes, because like you're just doing so many cool different things. And so I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about what you teach, like what are the types of courses you're teaching? I know I see like your students commenting on your LinkedIn posts or when they are asking questions in the Justice in Pieces live show. And so I know that you have them really engaged in the curriculum, but I'm wondering kind of like what that curriculum is and how you developed your teaching style. And if you could tell us a bit more about your evolution as a teacher.
Yeah, so I mean, it was interesting. Obviously I have no formal education in teaching, right? That it just sort of started similar to when you have practitioners that have a class at, in law school or university. So I got in and I was teaching, I think it was law clerk students, and it was a really small class, like 3 or 4 people. So it was great to kind of get your feet wet. And over time, I think what I noticed is there needs to be more sort of engagement of the students, right? It's one thing you just have a lecture and you talk, and I think largely that's, you know, a lot of the style that people use, but it was difficult, especially because we'd have these 4-hour blocks, right? So I'm like, I don't think anyone, I would joke, you know, only the best stand-up comedians maybe can hold your attention for 4 hours. But so what I would do is we would usually have like a little, it's kind of like the time play they would have at the movie theaters, this program called Kahoot. And we would review the last class's material. It'd be like cool questions and everyone can buzz in and guess the answer. And so it became ultra competitive because, you know, legal students have to be competitive. So we would have all that to kind of start off class. And then we'd have some prizes, or we'd let them pick like a cool, interesting bonus category. And it's almost like a game. I wouldn't say it's kind of like a game show, like a lot of the time there with all the different things we do. We have like a wheel of names. And I mean, I think I could just imagine thinking back when I was a student, how much anxiety this would be at Osgoode. But literally I put all the students' names and I spin the wheel, and it's not like you win a prize like how they use that online, but if your name gets called, then you have to answer a question. So it you know, it kind of takes some of those things and makes it a little fun. And then whoever the last name, you know, who's been able to continuously give correct answers, then is the winner, and you know, there's some kind of reward. So they are very engaged. They get an opportunity, and we have like a chat that it's crazy how many messages. I think I was looking, it was like 2,000 messages over a couple of classes, that there's a lot of asking questions. There's a lot of debate and dialogue. And I think that's really, especially with remote learning, that you have to have that kind of engagement piece, because otherwise people are maybe listening, they're cooking, they're in bed, and there's only so much you can do if it's one way where you're just talking to them, right? So evolution-wise, it's kind of coming up with ways to have things like discussions, debates, mock trials, all sorts of things there to get the students engaged, and it's more of a two-way conversation, right? So remote really actually was the opposite of what I thought. I thought when we were going remote, this is going to be a disaster. I'm not going to see anybody. I don't know if they're even doing anything, but largely the connection has gotten stronger because people are writing. The ones who would be afraid to put their hand up and ask a question can type it in the chat, and I'm seeing a lot more engagement that way. So I've really enjoyed the last 2 years, and I think that's really given me some ways in having cool ideas. And Justice and Peace there being another one of getting two-way dialogue going and getting the students engaged.
JP, that's so cool. I love the way that you talk about like having your students engaged in their learning. It definitely makes everything like more enjoyable when you're excited to go to class and you have an instructor who really cares and is passionate about what they're doing. And I mean, it's so clear that you are. I was wondering, do you think your students know that at one time you were a viral sensation in China? And do you mind telling us a bit more about what that was?
So again, this completely random, but and I usually tell them, and then at the end of the year, we'll play the videos and all the cool things that I got to do in China. And they're all surprised, right? Because they have this vision or this expectation of what a lawyer is supposed to be or what this. And then I do that really at the very beginning. I have it's three truths and a lie, and there's all these choices, and they have to identify which of them is not true about me. And then there's something argued before the Supreme Court, went skydiving, gone running with the bulls, or had a viral rap song in China. And everyone always thinks, the truth has to be the Supreme Court, and that's the one that ends up being the lie. But I was in China. I was teaching law. I think I had trial advocacy, tort law, contracts. I mean, it was such a great experience just teaching there. But I think I was teaching one day a week. It was I had two classes or three classes, and there was a morning, an afternoon, and a late afternoon. So I would always joke, because they were always on Mondays, is that when everyone was waking up here at 8:30 in the morning, the time difference, I mean, I was pretty much, my work week was done, right? And so I was thinking, what else can I do? So I did a little bit of traveling. And when I was in Osgoode, I used to be on the student government, and we would have these pub parties and everything like that. And I would DJ there. So I had a little experience DJing here and there. So a friend of mine was doing cover songs, and I would provide the backing instruments, and then I would play a little bit of music. And eventually someone asked, can you sing too? And I said, not at all, but I suppose I could do some rap songs, because first of all, not many people here would notice if I messed up really badly. And so I gave it a shot, and we would do some cover songs, where they'd have a rap verse. And I thought it was still strange that I'm doing all, it's kind of hip hop karaoke. So I thought, let me do something interesting, try to come up with something on my own. And so I was in the city, it was called Chongqing. And with the help of a few of the locals there, we wrote the song. It was Empire State of Mind, and I just changed it to be about Chongqing. I think they said that Chongqing was the New York, emerging New York of China at the time. So in a little bit of English and Chinese mixed, I kind of came up with these words, and we would do a couple performances with it, and didn't think anything of it. But when I was leaving, I made a PowerPoint video similar to the Empire State of Mind video of just the memories of this time I had in China. And then I came back to Canada, and I was this was after my second year in China. And that was time to go and get articling done. And I thought. And then when I was back here, I guess someone had put it up on, I think it's called Weibo in China, and it's their Twitter. And I guess it got some traction, and it was on the newspapers, and I was seeing all these covers with pictures of me on it. And so a couple months later, I said, let me just go back here, because this is really cool. And I'm not going to, again, the law can probably wait, but this experience is not going to go away. So I got to go and do some shows. There was a TV interview and all sorts of newspaper and things like that, and got to go into little clubs, and there was MMA fights where I would be the entertaining entertainment there at the beginning, or even there was an air show where we got to perform for these pilots from around the world. And there was police escort sometimes, and it was just I wish it happened a couple of years later, where you could have really documented it, because no one really understands how wild it is, right? I mean, who can really say they had that kind of experience? So I got to do that, and I stayed there for another 6 or so months, and then I came back after that and said, I've got this all out of my system, and it was great. And I would have no regrets that was the path that I took after law school. And, you know, in the end, everything comes full circle. And so I got to get called, and I'm very grateful for that opportunity.
That is so cool. Like, so cool. And definitely one of the most unique off the tracks paths that I have to say that we've heard of is becoming a viral sensation in China and getting to do talk shows and shows and everything. Like, that is just so cool. And the way you described it sounds exactly like how I would imagine it, like in a movie where you like leave and you come back and you see your face on things. And I just think that's so hilarious.
I am thinking of it like, bear with me, I'm gonna like age myself here. I'm thinking like you had like a Lizzie McGuire movie experience. I don't know how familiar you are personally with the 2004 hit classic, which I think like my grade 4 birthday party, a bunch of us went to the Lizzie McGuire movie. I'm not sure if that was what you were doing in 2004, but it's a great movie for anyone that hasn't seen it. And Lizzie McGuire gets mistaken for an international pop star. And it just turns out that like you were like a star in China. So I just feel like those are very the same. And in a way, you could probably pitch this as a movie somewhere, somehow. We can talk about it later.
Absolutely. I see this as a blockbuster.
I don't have any experience pitching movies, but like I would watch this movie.
Yeah, it's so funny because I would think how many like people would come up to me on the street and just take selfies, and I would have there was this is not even the thing that I would lead with, but somehow we got on this like Wipeout show because we were all these foreigners, and it was in China. They're competing. It was like China versus the foreigners. I think they were hoping that they would win, but we had won. I mean, I did terribly. But students always love watching me wipe out there on the show. But I mean, all these other random things I got to do, because it's just like, you're unique, right? That people, especially in where I was at that time, there wasn't that many foreigners coming. And although the students loved it, I mean, I'm not sure about how much about the law they really cared about, but they liked practicing their English. They liked learning about different areas, what was going on in Canada or the U.S. in terms of law, how it compares. And it's just such a thrilling time to be able to do all of these things. And there's a whole world out there that you don't really know about. And I had no idea. I thought I was going to Beijing initially. And then I was looking over the details when I was booking the flights. I'm like, oh, where's Chongqing? And there's like 36 million people that live in this city state, right? So it was such a blast. And I would recommend, eventually, hopefully in the near future, that people will get a chance to go and travel and do things, but get out of your element. And it was really something, who would have thought, right?
Yeah, seriously, that is so neat. Thank you very much for sharing this highly entertaining story with us. So I picture you, you're famous, you're going viral in China, you come back to Canada and you're looking for articles. And as you told us before, articles had been a bit of a roadblock for you before you had left for China. So can you tell us a bit more what it was like coming back and trying to find articles after being a viral sensation? Did it help?
Yeah, definitely. I remember interviews. That was like the lead question. And then, I mean, I don't even know if they were really interested in offering me the position or not, but they just would chat about what was it like to do these things in China. I mean, it was like, I felt like I was Milli Vanilli there, right? Because we first started, I was like a fake band. I had to, I didn't know how to play the keyboard or anything, but I would be pretending to play the piano. And then people would come and say, oh, you were amazing. It was great. And I felt like a Milli Vanilli fraud there. But eventually I got to rap and do all that. But that was such a great story for lawyers to listen to. So it was, I would always have that as like the last line in my CV there. And I found that I was getting a few more interviews, and eventually it connected not too much longer after being back. I mean, the only sort of punishment, I guess, for me by being over there for 3 years is, I think the Law Society has a rule that if you write the licensing exams, you have to go through finish the whole process within 3 years. So again, I always think I'm the only one. I'm sure there's someone out there hope you can connect. If you're listening to this, connect with me. I'd love to know. But I think I'm one of the few people who can say that they passed the licensing exams twice, because in 2009, I had to do them. And I thought, you know, I'll article and I'll be done. But it was in 2013 when I finished articling. So my reward for taking that detour in China was the Law Society says, you got to do it again. So I went and did it again and passed both the, you know, the barristers and solicitors exams. So that was, I mean, part of the articling experience, right, was to do this. It was really different because previously you would go and write the exams and then afterwards you would go and start your articles. And so I had to manage that. And then you didn't have the benefit of having, you know, the groups to work on with indices and things like that because you're so far out there. So, I mean, I found that it was a lot different. It was still, it wasn't like the first job I got hired for, but it still took some time. And it was quite a different, you know, you have that culture or the reverse culture shock, right? That you're so used to being able to walk and get you know, noodles for like the equivalent of 25 cents that, you know, you're coming back here. And as well, you're finding out from your colleagues, you know, people in my class now, they were 3 years out. What are they doing, right? And you have a different perspective, right? That, you know, back then, I mean, you thought, well, this is the way. And then people were going in-house or people were changing. And so for me, it worked out that I got that sort of insight that I wouldn't have had right away. And you know, it worked out. I got into criminal law. That was something I was interested in. And I got my articles done and took a little detour there. But September 2013, I got called to the bar and it was like a big accomplishment. I felt, you know, it was great to come back and come full circle and be able to get called.
Wow, GP, I personally have only spoken to one person that's been in a similar situation as you. They had passed one of the licensing exams in their first 3 year window and then not the other. So they had to go and do both again, like even the one that they had passed. I have so many choice words, like in general, for the Law Society, which I will spare from this episode. But wow, I can't believe that you did them and passed them twice, like 4 years apart. That's just incredible and should be unnecessary. But I totally digress. JP, I was wondering, like, your Justice in Pieces show is so cool. You have all types of people on it in the legal profession and beyond. You have politicians, you have paralegals, you have students, you have lawyers, all of these different people. And I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about what led you to create the show and what has been one of the highlights of creating the show for you.
I don't know. I mean, I heard about your origin story off the train there. So I don't have a cool origin story at all. I literally, there was a pandemic and I thought it was going to be 2 weeks. And I said, what can I do for 2 weeks? We were talking about engagement that is going to keep students awake. And so I started just contacting a few of my colleagues. I said, hey, I've been wanting you to come and talk to my students. It's pretty easy now. We can figure something out on Skype. I think we tried Skype first because that was the only technology I really knew pre-pandemic. So I just lined up people for a week or 2 weeks. And I thought, okay, well, let's go for 2 weeks and then we'll be back in the classroom and students will be happy with it. And of course, as you know, as it is when we're recording here at the end of January in Ontario, and you know, we're getting some things back next week, but it kept continuing. We kept studying and teaching remotely. So I just kept doing it every day and thinking, okay, it's going to be another week. And you know, 400 people later, it's still happening. And so for me, I mean, initially it was, they would come in and they would talk to the students and they would share, you know, advice and contact information and students would connect with them. And then eventually I had a student who was connected, I think, with some of the politicians. And I believe it was an MP from British Columbia, Jenny Kwan, that was coming on. And I thought, okay, well, other people will probably want to listen to the politician too. Like, what can I do to get this? So I figured out how to record it. And then we got even, like, I got a little bit more ambitious when I had one politician. So I wrote to, you know, the Honorable Andrew Scheer, Jagmeet Singh, Elizabeth May, they all came on. And so then I started recording more and more. And then I said, why don't I just record them all, right? I mean, I can have students next year that would want to listen to this. I could have students in other schools who would want to listen to this, lawyers, paralegals. I mean, I'm sure I need to figure it out, but probably can get some CPD hours for a lot of the substantive content. And so then I just made it a habit to get it recorded, and it's live too, right? So it's another, you know, you add that to the table, but yeah, I mean, I just had all these different people on. So the highlight, I mean, really is getting to talk to so many different people in our profession, right? And every area. And no one would really do like the coffee so much as easy, the virtual coffee, but coming in and also talking with my students, I mean, it gives me, I think I benefit the most because I listen to all of these great stories, these great people and what's worked for them and advice that they have. And I mean, really, I'm really just impressed with how easy it's been to get so many people to spare some time. And I love just being able to ask those questions. And I love that the students benefit from it. And I think as well, the guests do, they get a chance to kind of come out of their shell and share a bit about themselves and what got them to that point. And it's great that people are giving back to the community. And I've really loved the opportunity to be able to ask those questions and get all those people on and get a free legal education out there for the general public as well.
Well, thank you so much, JP, for coming on our show and letting us put you in the hot seat for once and trade spaces, because earlier this week I was on the hot seat and live, which was out of my comfort zone because I'm used to these where I can count to five in my head and redo if I don't like what I just said. So thank you so much for coming on the show, Piper, and I loved being in Justice in Pieces. So we are so grateful that you were able to come onto the podcast and share some time with us. We always like to end our episodes with the same question, which is, what is something new that you've learned recently?
So I think I, along with like everyone else in the last couple of weeks, have jumped on this Wordle craze. I don't know about you, Aaron or Piper. And you know, literally at 12:01, I wanted to do it because I don't want somehow there to be like a leak or a spoiled thing there. So that's something new. I mean, I didn't know. Apparently, it's been going on for months there. But I mean, I think it's great to do things like that. I mean, sometimes I play like it's like 30-second chess as well. But just something that you can do quickly to take a break away from everything, right? And I think it's really important in terms of taking care of your mental health to have some cool things like that, or you know, another hobby or some activity that you can do, especially because you engage with other people outside of maybe a law topic or for my students' questions that they may have. So that's something new that I've learned. And I think maybe you'll jump on the craze there as well, Aaron. It's been something cool and really interesting. And maybe that will be your new last question. What's your starting word that you have there?
JP, I was about to ask you, I'm a big Wordle nerd myself these days. And do you have a starting word or do you like to mix it up?
I've been pretty consistent with the word tears. I don't know if that is really effective because it has. You know, I think back to when I was a kid, we would watch Wheel of Fortune and they would have the R-S-T-L-N-E. And I think, well, how many of those letters I can get? And then the second guest try to bring in the rest of them. I don't know if that's a strategy other people use or not. I'm just trying to figure out as it goes along. But it's kind of like the lottery. I feel like if I change that word, that's the time it's going to come in handy. So, you know, it's that gambler's fallacy, right? That eventually it's going to come up really good. You know, I'm pretty good at getting it in like 3 or 4. I had one time I got it in 2, but that's the goal, right? Is to get it in the second one. I think that's the hope that I'm gonna get with sticking to the same word over and over. And one time it's gonna come up.
That's amazing. My starting word is I mix it up, but recently I've been big on using the word agony, which maybe tells you about like the state of my life. I think it's a good word. You know, you have like.
Well, it is.
You have the A, the O, you've got a Y, which can be a wild card sometimes. You've got a couple strong consonants there. But I do mix it up to add some pizzazz, depending on the day. But Aaron,
you guys get today's Wordle?
Yeah, I did today's Wordle. But like, I guess it wouldn't be a spoiler. Today's word, JP, did you?
Oh, I know what it is. Yeah. I don't do it. I just know.
Was today? I can't remember. I feel it was,
it started with a P.
Yes, it was it Perky.
Perky, yeah.
Yes. So
we're ending on a very perky note today. JP, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. It's been such a joy talking to you today here at On Justice and Pieces. To find episodes of Justice and Pieces, be sure to follow JP and the show on LinkedIn. And to stay up to date with Off the Tracks, you can follow us on Instagram at Off the Tracks Podcast. And stay tuned for our next episode coming out next Tuesday.
Bye.